Hi, Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 757, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part four, Dramatis Personae, part four, subtitled The Groupon Hobbit and the Underground Reich. This program is being recorded on October 6th of the year 2013. In this side of the broadcast, I'm going to read one of the many posts that is up on the SpitfireList.com website in the news and supplemental section. This post is titled Snowden's Ride, Part 12, The Groupon Hobbit, The Deep Fifth Column, and the Underground Reich. Now, the Groupon Hobbit is the name that I have given to Alex Karp, the ostensible sort of neo-hippie, lefty, progressive, Tolkien-esque kind of guy, who is the CEO of Palantir. That appears to be the company's disclaimers to the contrary, notwithstanding, the company that makes the Prism software at the focal point of Edward Snowden's, quote, disclosures, unquote. I would note that in addition to heading up Palantir, Alex Karp is also the CEO of a company called Robotics, that's spelled R-O-B-O-T-X, and that makes Security Robots, the largest investor in Palantir and in Robotics is Peter Thiel, who is also the primary funder of Ron Paul's Super PAC. So in examining all of this, we're going to maintain the principle of following the money. Now, this post, I'm simply going to read the post and then read the text excerpt. I want to note a couple of things. We're going to be examining not just Alex Karp, who, bear in mind, has a couple of companies primarily capitalized. The largest investor is someone who explicitly does not believe in democracy. That's Peter Thiel, an individual whom, as we saw in For the Record 718, the program In Your Facebook, a virtual panopticon, appears to be Underground Reich. In turn, Alex Karp is the main influence in his life is a German philosopher named Jürgen Habermas, with whom Karp studied for years in Germany. And with both Karp and Habermas, we are going to be considering the possibility that both may be the embodiment of what we looked at in connection with Mein Kampf when Hitler said, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts." And this particular post, again, Snowden's Ride, Part 12, The Groupon Hobbit, The Deep Fifth Column, and The Underground Reich, I'm going to read in a second. A couple of things to keep in mind. We're going to be referencing two excerpts from the book The Nazis Go Underground, written before the Normandy invasion in 1944. That book is published by Kurt Riess. Two of the things he notes, as he noted the Third Reich's preparation to go underground, one that, well, young Germans who were in the Hitler Youth and who would be impressed into combat units at the very end of the war were being groomed as the leaders of post-World War II Germany in its Underground Reich phase. One person who fits that mold, so to speak, is Jürgen Habermas, who is the top intellectual influence on Alex Karp. I would also note that one of the things that's pointed out in the Riess text is that those who were selected as transitional leaders, so to speak, would be people who had an ostensibly anti-Nazi background, but who actually were reactionaries who had collaborated with many of the Nazis and their institutions on the way up. One of those was a guy named Max Planck. Max Planck is best known as the father of quantum physics. He is a very famous physicist, just as Jürgen Habermas is a very famous philosopher. We are going to be looking at indications that neither is as advertised. Now, Snowden's Ride, Part 12, The Gruppen Hobbit and the Underground, like reads as follows. I'm going to read my comments and then the text excerpt. In this post, we examine the circumstances, personal history, and political and professional antecedents of Alex Karp, K-A-R-P, the CEO of Palantir, the company that makes the Prism software that is at the center of Eddie the Friendly Spook's disclosures. We nickname him the Gruppen Hobbit because of his company's affinity with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Now, again, I note that Palantir actually denies that their Prism is the Prism. The notion that there would be more than one counter-terror software program being used by the intelligence community with identical names just is not credible. Skipping down. It is less clear precisely who is the immediate intelligence controller of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, although BND, the German intelligence service, and the successor to the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit, is certainly involved and may be the ultimate executive authority. The probability is very strong that a deep fifth column within U.S. intelligence, military, corporate, and political structure is involved. For newer users of this website, or I would add listeners to the program, we note that it is impossible to briefly explain the concept of the Underground Reich. The very mention of such a term will seem like madness to the uninitiated. I recommend that people read The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Ries, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, The New Germany and the Old Nazis by T.H. Tettens, and the article The Secret Treaty of Fort Hunt by Carl Oglesby. All of those, by the way, are available for download for free on the Spitfire website. I go on to comment, although life certainly presents examples of strange bedfellows, the circumstances surrounding Alex Karp's situation suggest that there is more to his professional and political life than meets the eye. The same could be said for his academic mentor, Jürgen Habermas, one of Germany's most prestigious post-war philosophers. Note, we are of the considered professional opinion that both the Gruppen Hobbit and his mentor Habermas are underground Reich. We should also note that in the age of mind control, it is altogether possible that, if our working hypothesis is correct, both men may be under the effects of such processing. Mind control can be implemented in such a way as a subject, in this case Karp and or Habermas, could pass a lie detector test or even be tortured to death without revealing the information concealed by the process. By the way, I would also point out that when I talk about an underground Reich, as is the case with matters dealing with espionage or spying, an underground operative is underground. What he or she is not on the surface. That is also obviously the case with spies. So when I'm speaking about an underground Reich, that would not be immediately evident on the surface. And again, perhaps Karp and or Habermas are under mind control, or perhaps they're simply cynics. One can but hazard a guess, or perhaps they are both very skilled liars. Whatever one of those possibilities manifests is a matter of conjecture. And I then go on to note some points that will be developed at greater length. The circumstances of Alex Karp's professional involvement with Palantir and Peter Thiel seem improbable on their surface. In this context, we note that Karp is an ostensible neo-hippie-slash-lefty-slash-progressive, or his background is so represented. The notion that he would sustain a lifelong lucrative professional relationship with uber reactionary Peter Thiel seems highly unlikely to us. Thiel's political views are so fascistic that he has explicitly denounced democracy as incompatible with freedom, in considerable measure because we made what he sees as the mistake of allowing women to vote. By the way, another of the a member of the board of directors of Palantir is Condoleezza Rice. I wonder what she thinks about the fact that the largest investor in this company doesn't think she should be allowed to vote. I wonder what female employees of Palantir think about the notion that their largest investor doesn't think they should be allowed to vote. And I wonder what the various customers of Palantir, from government contractors to private corporations, believe in the fact that the largest investor explicitly rejects democracy. Another point made here. The name of the firm is derived from the Palantiri, the seeing stones of the Lord of the Rings. In keeping with the Tolkien theme, Palantir's headquarters are nicknamed the Shire, the homeland of the hobbits in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Hence our nickname for Alex Karp as the Gruppen Hobbit. A more appropriate nickname for Palantir's headquarters would appear to be Mordor under the circumstances. In addition to Palantir, which operates in conjunction with multiple intelligence services, the military, and law enforcement, including the intrusive PRISM operations, Karp has teamed again with Peter Thiel in robotics, which manufactures security robots. And again, Peter Thiel, the largest investor in that firm, and Alex Karp is the CEO. Again, we find the circumstances of Karp's ascent to be unlikely. A lefty, hippie, freedom-loving, Tolkien-esque individual hooking up with an antediluvian reactionary like Thiel seems improbable. After studying law, Karp decamped for Germany. We wonder if Thiel's interaction with Karp at Stanford was more than represented here. Did Thiel, in fact, hook the Gruppenführer up with the Bormann network of Underground Reich in Germany? In Germany, Karp spent years studying under Jürgen Habermas, one of Germany's most famous post-war intellectual figures, also an ostensible leftist. More about Habermas is to be found below. Habermas appears to be the single greatest intellectual influence on Karp. We suspect the influence may be more than just intellectual. After getting an inheritance from his grandfather, Karp begins to dabble in investments with no apparent background in securities analysis. His efforts are so successful that other investment professionals and people with significant sums to invest start flocking to this crazy guy, unquote, as he is termed, to invest their money. Theoretically possible, this seems unlikely under the circumstances. And again, just imagine you're a one percenter with a whole bunch of money to invest. Karp supposedly he inherited a bunch of money from his grandfather, who that was is not named, then just started making some investments, turned out to be wildly successful, and in the Forbes article from Forbes of September 2nd of 2013, people just started flocking to this, quote, crazy guy, unquote. Imagine you're a one percenter and you've got a bunch of money to invest, and somebody says, hey, have you heard about this crazy guy who's doing all of this great investing? A crazy guy, huh? Yeah. Does he smoke joints? Yeah, he does. Is he into Tolkien? Yeah, he is. Wow, that's great. Let's give him all our money. I don't buy it. Sorry. Get the shovel, spread that on the garden. It will be good for the vegetables. What I suspect happened is that somewhere along the line, perhaps Peter Thiel, perhaps Habermas, perhaps somebody else in Germany, hooked Alex Karp up with the Bormann Capital Network, and his largesse and success in that regard comes from those quarters rather than the fact that he just smoked joints and read Lord of the Rings and just became a crazy guy with all of this investing success. Continuing, the Guggenhabits' money-managing success leads to his establishment of a European-based capital management firm. Again, we wonder if perhaps Karp was hooked up with elements of the Bormann Capital Network and or corporate Germany. Is that where his Cademan Group has its genesis, question mark? After returning to the U.S., the Guggenhabit hooks up with Thiel, whose background appears to be underground Reich, with roots in the IG Farben successor organizations. As we have seen, Palantir is inextricably linked with the intelligence community, having its beginnings enabled by InQtel, a CIA-linked venture capital firm. As can be seen in the Forbes article, which should be read in its entirety, Palantir also works with law enforcement and the financial community. It would appear to be the ultimate data mining entity. Our questions about the Guggenhabits' activities in Germany derive largely from analysis of the ostensible leftist Jürgen Habermas's curriculum vitae. Again, Habermas appears to be the dominant intellectual and possibly professional influence on Karp. Habermas was one of what were called the Flakhelfer, young Germans who served in the Hitler Youth and then served in anti-aircraft units near the end of the war. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who became Pope Benedict XVI, was one of the Flakhelfer. Ratzinger Benedict XVI's circumstances argue strongly for his belonging to the underground Reich. And we're going to, in a future broadcast, discuss Ratzinger's exit from the papacy and some of the things he did just before he left, because those are most interesting. Continuing with this analysis, the Flakhelfer yielded much of the creme de la creme of German intellectuals for the post-war period, as set forth in pages 78 and 79 of The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Rees. Youths such as the Flakhelfer were seen as essential for forming the post-war leadership of the post-war underground Reich. Among the most prominent of the Flakhelfer is Nobel Prize-winning writer Günter Grass. He turned out to have served in the Waffen-SS. Rather more than just a Flakhelfer under the circumstances. Another of the Flakhelfer, Hans Magnus Enzensberger, has been an ardent defender of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden. Although the Guggenhabits' intellectual mentor Habermas has written critically of the Nazi period, one of his intellectual antecedents, Martin Heidegger, were Nazis. In fact, most of the influences on Jürgen Habermas were Nazis, even though he has written critically of Martin Heidegger. Habermas's doctoral supervisors are cases in point. Both were in the Nazi camp. One was Oscar Becker. The other of his doctoral supervisors was Erich Rotteker, who in turn was very close to Third Reich luminaries Joseph Goebbels and Alfred Rosenberg. In addition to Nazi Party member Martin Heidegger, another of the intellectual influences on Habermas was Gottfried Benn, B-E-N-N, another who turned to the Nazi philosophy despite later alleged differences. Chief among the reasons we seriously doubt the integrity of Habermas's persona as a, quote, leftist, unquote, or progressive, unquote, concerns the fact that he was appointed as director of the Max Planck Institute for 12 years. We wonder if Palantir might be the derivative of Underground Reich or Max Planck Institute research. The reason for that, basically, is in the following point. The Max Planck Institute was the name given in the post-war period to the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. A primary influence on the science of the Third Reich, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute was heavily capitalized by the Rockefeller Foundation and was an epicenter of eugenics thinking and legislation prior to and during the ascent of the Third Reich. As we have seen, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes were the recipients of Rockefeller Foundation generosity. The Rockefeller milieu saw to it that the best scientists, including Jewish ones, were kept on staff in contravention of Nazi pressure in order to maximize the quality of the work that they were funding. Generally viewed as an isolated event and an aberration, Josef Mengele's Auschwitz work with twins was the direct outgrowth of mainstream eugenics research. Long preoccupied with the study of twins, eugenicists celebrated the Nazi dictatorship for its ability to use coercion to achieve their objective of detailed, intensive research on the subject. The Rockefeller Foundation's funding went well into the tenure of the Third Reich. The Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes, later named the Max, renamed the Max Planck Institutes, were the primary focal point of Nazi eugenics research on twins. Eugen Fischer was the director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Genetics, and Eugenics throughout most of the Nazi period and was deeply involved with the development of the programs that paved the way for Mengele's work at Auschwitz. Josef Mengele conducted his brutal and lethal research at Auschwitz on twins in direct conjunction with the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute and his intellectual mentor at that institution, Dr. Freiherr Ottmar von Verschuer. Although Mengele's ghastly work with twins at Auschwitz became fairly well known after the war, few realize that this endeavor was a direct extension of the eugenics work at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, again, lavish recipients of Rockefeller Foundation funding. Simply put, Germany was never effectively denazified in terms of its institutions. The Third Reich continued underground. The notion that an institution such as the Max Planck Institute, nay, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, would have been headed for 12 years by a leftist is not credible. An ostensible leftist working as an underground Reich functionary would make excellent public relations fodder while maintaining the Reich security necessary for an institution central to German scientific research. I will also note in passing that undoubtedly the Max Planck Institute, nay, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, would necessarily have been deeply involved with Project Paperclip, the incorporation of many of the Third Reich's top scientists into U.S. intelligence, into U.S. Defense industry in the post-war period. Also, the Max Planck Institute, nay, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, would undoubtedly have been very close to the German intelligence service in the post-war period. Next point here. Max Planck himself, although opposed to the Reich's treatment of Jewish scientists whom he shielded professionally, headed the institutes for much of the early period of the Third Reich. It was during this time that the horrors manifested by Mengele were gathering momentum. His protests against the treatment of Jewish colleagues were consistent with the wishes of the Rockefeller Foundation funders of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Max Planck himself, the father of quantum physics, was reinstalled as head of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes just over a week after the conclusion of hostilities, just over a week after the guns fell silent in Europe. Undoubtedly, Kaiser Wilhelm research and research scientists would have been part of the Project Paperclip recruitment effort under which the Allies requisitioned much of the Nazi scientific establishment to continue their work in the West. His glowing reputation notwithstanding, Planck's circumstances suggest he may well have been one of the individuals with an anti-Nazi reputation selected to establish continuity during the post-war period. Now, the relevant sources there, we've already spoken. I'm not going to have time to read these. We're running low on time. Again, the article from Forbes magazine of 9/2/2013, how a, quote, deviant, unquote, philosopher built Palantir, a CIA-funded data mining juggernaut, by Andy Greenberg and Ryan Mack. Then pages 78-79 of The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Rees. It goes, in spite of all the speaking of the young Germans selected to become leaders in post-war Germany, in spite of all of this training they're giving the youth for the future for underground purposes, the leaders do not depend primarily upon these young people in the first place, because many of them will be dead at the zero hour. Many of them will have been thrown into the final battles of the war. But far more important than this is another very potent argument. These young men, many of them now still children, have never known the hard times of the Nazi Party. Then Jürgen Habermas, a biography from the European Graduate School. He was 15 when Germany lost the war to the Allies. He had served in the Hitler Youth and had been sent to defend the Western Front during the final months of the war. His father was a passive sympathizer with Nazism, and he was the primary influence on Alex Karp. Then, Legality and Legitimacy, Jürgen Habermas' Reconstruction of German Political Thought, again, notes that many of the top German intellectuals in the post-war period were Flockhelfer, including Günter Grass and Hans Magnus Enzensberger and Jürgen Habermas. We also talk about the revelation that well-known Nobel Prize-winning author Günter Grass had been in the Waffen-SS. Many other sources here. Surveillance revelations shake U.S.-German ties. This is about Enzensberger. And then the many Nazi influences on Jürgen Habermas. All of his intellectual antecedents were Nazis. Martin Heidegger, whom he later criticized, Erich Rottecker, and Oskar Becker, his doctoral thesis supervisors. Oskar Becker and Gottfried Benn were some of his top intellectual antecedents. Again, the people who are the intellectual predecessors for Jürgen Habermas were all Nazis. Jürgen Habermas was the number one influence on Alex Karp's life by many accounts. There is discussion of Martin Heidegger's Nazi Party membership and his touting of it. We also note in terms of the Wikipedia Kaiser Wilhelm Society entry, during the Third Reich it was implicated in Nazi scientific operations, and after the Second World War was wound up, its functions being taken over by the Max Planck Society that was headed up by Jürgen Habermas for 12 years. We then have many passages from the book The War Against the Weak by Edwin Black, and those passages in turn were accessed at greater length than with others in For the Record program number 664. We also noted the fact that Max Planck himself headed up the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute until 1938, and although he disagreed with the Nazi leadership over some aspects of operation, he wanted to keep the best scientists on staff, including Jewish scientists. That was in keeping with the wishes of the Rockefeller Foundation. And I would also note that Max Planck discouraged some who were going to demonstrate against the anti-Semitic policies of the Third Reich. All of these sources will be in the description with lengthy excerpts for the record program number 757. However, we are all out of time. So tune in next week, boys and girls, for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This concludes For the Record program number 757, Side 2, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 4, Dramatis Personae, Part 4, subtitled The Gruppen Hobbit and the Underground Reich. This has been recorded on October 6th of the year 2013. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.